At least I'm an alcoholic. This is a big meeting. Happy birthday, Karen and Carlos. Where'd you guys go? Happy birthday. That's awesome. And Johnny, thank you. Let's see. Let's get the statistics out of the way. My sobriety date is December 28th, 1986, and I got sober when I was 22. And, you know, if that hadn't happened, I'd probably be dead today. Where to start? I, too, like Johnny, came in as an addict. I definitely had a problem with drugs, and it took a long time to become an alcoholic. Today, I know that, you know, for me, a drug is a drug is a drug is a drug. The bottom line is I got to go. There was never anything ever moderate about my drinking. I always drank for one reason only, and that was to get drunk. I blacked out every time I drank. I puked, passed out, massive hangovers. That was what happened. I don't like hangovers, so the other stuff made it a little bit easier. But the bottom line is I got to go. I am the baby of my household, but there's only two of us. My brother is also in this program, and that's a story unto itself. You know, I was raised in a traditional household, and today they would call it dysfunctional. Back then, it was what it was. I remember one of my most vivid memories is coming down the stairs at 9 years old and asking where my mother was, and my dad had to sit me down and tell me that she had to go to Kansas because my brother, who was only 13 at that time, had tried to commit suicide. And hence started this role. I am the white sheep of my family, so it says something about my brother. Once again, story later to progress. And so I watched him go in and out of treatment centers and in and out of mental hospitals and lots of things. And I was just the quiet little girl who sat on the side and got good grades and just, you know, kind of, now that I think back on it, wanted to just not raise any problems. But I still did a few things that my brother did. Later down the years when I was 14, I remember one time my brother had stolen a bunch of my mom's diet pills and had stayed up all night and seen bugs and hallucinated and all that. And I am not one to learn by observation, unfortunately. I learn by doing. So I had to do the same thing. And I just stayed up all night. I didn't get the fun hallucinations or anything like that. Was sicker than a dog. And I was like, well, that's enough of that. I got drunk for the first time when I was 14. Back up a little bit there. I was about 13. My brother, once again, in an alcoholic binge, had run away from the halfway house, was on the way to Kansas, where my grandparents lived, and the cops pulled him over, and my mom said, enough's enough. And he became either a ward of a court, or he was going to go to the school in Maine, a fix-it school. We're talking 1977. And he went to the school, and it did really well for him. It did really well for him. And I decided, he's doing great. I want to go. So at 13, I'm shipped to Bath, Maine, which is like the farthest you can get from San Diego, California, and stay in the continental United States. And so I fly out there. I'm the youngest kid. I am 13, going to school with teenagers that are 19. And, you know, it was an adventure, to say the least. Don't think it was the best thing for me, but who knew then? When I left there, I did not want to go to public school, and I think that's God working in my life, because if I'd gone to public school, I probably would have gotten here at the age of, if I'd ever gotten here, 16. I would have ended up much quicker here. I ended up in a private boarding school in Arizona, halfway between Phoenix and Flagstaff, and thrown in with 200 other kids from all over the world, and talk about not fitting in. When people talked from this podium about feeling like they didn't fit in as an alcoholic, boy, did I relate. I never felt like I fit in. I was sweet little Lisa, what a pretty face, you know, always with a little weight problem. And I had no place to run. We lived there, 724. I had no place to run. The cool kids were partying. And that's all I wanted to be, was a cool kid. Just wanted to be a part of. So the first time I got stoned and the first time I got drunk, I was 14. A friend of mine had illegally shipped me in a little bottle of Bacardi 151. And we mixed that with Coke. And I sat in my closet and drank it all up. And then I ran around the campus going, wow, I'm drunk. And nobody believed me. Okay. First time I smoked pot was that same year, and nothing really happened. And then I just didn't do it, because my greatest fear was they were going to find out about me. They were going to find me. I was going to get kicked out, and that's a failure. I don't do failure well. I didn't do anything. And I got the great, but I'm okay, because I got this nice report card that I'm a straight-A student, I did really well in that area. Go home for the summers, come back. Graduation night, we're in Phoenix, Arizona, at The Point, which is a really nice, huge hotel. And I just remember somebody passing me a pipe, and the next thing I know, I'm on the floor somewhere, laying down, and still people are not understanding. It's like, what's wrong with you? I am not the party girl. And I don't know if that was what spurned me on from once I hit college, but I just didn't want to be. I wanted to take that halo off and throw it as far as I could throw it. When I went to college, I got hooked up with a bunch of people that were major partiers. I was at a place that nobody knew me, and I could do anything and be anything I wanted to be. And I always wanted to be something other than who I am. And so I started smoking dope. I started partying any chance I could get. I was on the one floor that was all females, but down below was co-ed. And I was downstairs one night meeting the guys. And I don't know, I must have had a bag of pot or something like that. And we were all getting wasted in one form or another, as college students do. And about a week later, I was talking to a friend of mine. He's like, man, when I first met you, I thought you were just such a loady. And I was like, yes, I've made it. That's what I want to be. I finally got there. Such aspirations I had. Warped perception is my problem. Huh. 151, just like hitting all this stuff. 151 and Kool-Aid. I can't look at pink Kool-Aid anymore. After my first semester there, it's like everybody split up. Like, some people went off campus, some people went upstairs, and I'm sitting in a room all by myself. I have my own dorm room. I'm still a freshman in college, and I have my own dorm room. Unheard of. My senior year in high school, I had my own room away from the rest of the dorms. Unheard of. The most loneliest time of my life. I just sat in my room and cried. And 3 weeks into it, I said, I'm done. I want to come home. San Diego's been my home, for a very long time. Didn't think it was that cool until I finally got back here and got sober. Then I realized what a fabulous place this is to live. So I came home to San Diego and moved in with my mom and, got a job and did that one thing. And one thing leads to another. I got to find somebody who sells pot. I just find the people I need to find to do what I need to do to feel better. And so that's 18. I got sober at 22. I hit it hard. I hit it fast. It didn't last long. And I was done. I love that. I remember when I was young, it was like, don't smoke pot because it will lead to harder things. Yeah, okay. Well, it led to harder things. When I first got sober and I heard when you guys read chapter 3, and it always brings me back to mind, taking a trip, not taking a trip. Well, if you drop the acid, you've screwed your sobriety up from there on. I never got the whole travel part of that whole sentence. I was, whatever says of taking a trip, my head instantly went to dropping acid, sorry. Of course you're not sober if you take a trip. So, you know, at age 20, 21, I am practically living with the coke dealer who's old enough to be my father. Because I'm going to find the people who have got what I want, and I will do anything to get what I need. You know, I will buy you with my... I will do a lot of service work when I was drinking and using because I could get what I wanted, what I needed. Today, I do it for a whole different reason. You know, and it was fun for a while. It was fun for a while. And then June 1986... one more time at a different dealer's house. The guys in the big yellow jackets and the nice things that break down doors knocked on the door, DEA on the back. And everybody went to jail but me. And I don't know why. I did not go to jail. I was left, I guess, though. I was the one with only one with money to bail everybody out. You know, and that just made me switch drugs and switch dealers. And by the time September of 1986 came around, somewhere back in there, before September when I finally hit bottom, my parents had come to me and said, you need to get help or get the heck out of our lives. Or you need to get help. And I still wasn't ready. This is when I'm prickly living with the father figure drug dealer. And so I went to a psychologist once a month or once a week for a month. And just blabbed BS. You know, because I wasn't ready to get sober. But come September, after spending a summer of screaming in the shower, when I got sober, I weighed like 75 pounds less than I do now, covered in scabs, infection in my legs so bad I could barely walk, screaming in the showers, barely able to hold down water. I didn't have a problem. I thought I was cool. I'm finally skinny. Yay. You know, didn't get it. Did not get it. And my parents came to me one more time and said, you get help or get the hell out of our lives. And I had some money and I had a car. And I could have said, I'm gone. But something in my head said, okay. I could not imagine my life without my parents. So I went back to that treatment center that I had been evaluated at 6 months prior, who said I was chemically dependent then. And they said, guess what? You're still chemically dependent. Surprise, surprise. And instead of outpatient treatment, we really think you need to come inpatient now. And I said, okay. I said, okay. And for me, that was God speaking through me. And I also remember the night before I went in, I was curled up in a ball, crying like a baby in the corner of our dining room because I was terrified. How am I going to live my life without substances? You know, I got to go. I am not okay being right here, right now, who I am with you. So I got to go. And I know how to do that instantly. And if I can't do it instantly, I got a car. I put 25,000 miles on my car the last year that I was drinking and using. I never left San Diego County. I actually never got farther south than the 94. And between Cardiff and the 94. That was about it, 25,000 miles. Usually, most of them about 4:30 a.m. Looking for it. It is out there. I want to find it. You know, it, as the cops go flying by me with their lights screaming, scaring the crud out of me. You know, and as I said, I did a lot of drugs. If they weren't there, you know, I got to go. I know where tequila shooters take me. Really quick. And, you know, I just had enough, I guess, because I ended up in that treatment center the next day. And my mom, thank God, did not cave in. Without Al-Anon under her belt, she did not cave in. And so I walked into a treatment center. And what I learned in that treatment center is the most important thing is I'm not alone. There's a bunch of us that are really sick. Y'all are sick just like me, and I like that. Amen. Hopefully we're not all sick on the same day. That's how this works. Y'all think like I do. You know, I've always had those thoughts. When somebody, the other thing that I really related to is alcoholics are egomaniacs with an inferiority complex. Ding, 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 big light went off in my head. I got that. Don't you know who I am? And I'm a piece of crud. All in, like, the split second of a thought. You know, and it gave me a chance to detox, sleep a lot. It gave me a chance to be safe and tucked away. I don't know if I could have gotten sober just by going to meetings. I really don't. And my hat is off to you, those of you who have been able to do that. I need to be locked away for a while. And I got taught the language and the etiquette of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because, you know, we speak a really different language here. It just made it safe. And I got to start to learn about me. And I got introduced to the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And got taken out to lots of meetings in a safe environment. And started to be able to get friends that were doing the same thing I was doing. And I could speak my mind no matter how crazy it was. You know, and not be judged. At least I didn't know I was being judged. And I got some time under my belt. It gave me 30 days. And then when I left, I didn't have a job because I was totally unemployable. I was self-employed when I got sober. and I'm still living at Mom's. And Mom and me. And so I was able to do a lot of volunteer work. And I am truly, truly grateful that I got stuck in a group of people who are hardcore service addicts. And so the first spring roundup, it's like, you need to look like you look like you need service work. Come, sit. Do that. Okay. I'm going to sit at the registration table for the next 3 hours. What do you want me to do? I got involved in the same meetings. My first sponsor, the big thing, get the same meetings. Go to the same meetings every week. So people, when you don't show up, people are asking. Get a commitment. Be consistent. Get new friends. You know, I did lots and lots. I mean, at 22, God, it was crazy back in 1986. It was the height of treatment centers. Everybody was going to treatment center, whether they needed it or not. I got involved with some H&I stuff at Harborview with the adolescent ward. I was secretary, and I just did everything, and lots of dances. Oh, my God, dances every week. Out playing. So I had probably more fun sober than I ever had drinking and using because I never got out of the dealer's house when I was drinking and using. I had one activity. That's all I did, you know? Or taking a drink. That was as far as I could make it at that moment. oh my. At 60 days sober, I had helped my old dealer move. That was smart. And somehow a butt of pot had jumped into my back pocket. Don't know how that happened. To be honest, a pot made everything okay every single time I ever got stoned. The cunning and bafflingness of this disease. I'm on my phone to my sponsor. Yeah, I'm going to go down to the center, pick up some women, take them to a meeting, and, you know, yada, yada, yada. Hang up the phone, buy a pot, go upstairs and get stoned. And highly recommend not going to an AA meeting. I highly don't recommend going to an AA meeting stoned. It was not fun. But that's what you got to do. That's what you got to do. As long as you're here. And for the first time, you know, sometimes that's all that matters. And for the first time, I was paranoid. I went right back into my head. I'm driving down from Cardiff to pick up these women at the center, and I did the first 3 steps. So I'm sitting there going, you know, this is just not good. And the problem is I just smoked a little too much. If I go back, there's still some there. You know, I got to finish it. Doesn't matter how crappy I feel now, I got to finish it. And I'm like, oh, I think that's powerlessness. And yeah, I think I'm pretty unmanageable right now. And 2, the problem is, you know, I just smoked a little bit too much. I smoke a little bit less, it'll be okay. Oh, let's see. I think I've heard repeating the same action over and over again, expecting a different result, is called insanity. I think I'm insane. And the most important thing is I don't want this anymore. I'm done. You know, and I needed that one last thing because that particular substance had never failed me. I knew where alcohol took me, puking in a toilet with a hangover. You know, I know where the white substance takes me. I don't want that anymore. But I needed that one more thing. And so, you know, I came back into the rooms and took a different sobriety date. Later that year, I'm at Christmas. I'm at my brother's house. My brother's not sober at this time. He is giving away buds of pot and inlaid pipes for Christmas. Thank you so much. You wait till I'm sober to do that. I appreciate that. So I know that smoking, where that takes me, I can't do that. But once again, cunning, baffling, powerlessness, craziness from this disease. There were two little roaches sitting in an ashtray, and I had to swallow them. I got nothing out of them. I'm kind of embarrassed of admitting it, you know? But that's where this disease took me. It took me 4 years sitting in a big book study to finally break down and admit to it and change my sobriety date. It doesn't matter how stupid it is. If I didn't do that, I was going to drink, you know? I was going to drink. That's the craziness of this disease. And so, you know, hence my sobriety date, December 28th, 1986. I have been sober ever since then. You know, I got, like I said, I dove into service work, worked on the San Diego Spring Roundup, great thing to do, lots of fellowship there. I was involved with it for about 12 years, loved every minute of it, secretariat of meetings. I got really involved in a sister program that we uses this book as its book, or did then. And so I got really acquainted with the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I was at a place where I felt like I could talk to you about the other stuff and not be judged. Okay? And there came a time at 4 years sober that I was the one in the room with the most sobriety. So you need to come to Alcoholics Anonymous because you guys have got the sobriety and you guys have lived many, many years sober and have dealt with life. And I need to learn how to live life sober today. A good friend of mine who passed away a couple years ago looked at me and says, "You're an addict. You'll become an addict, alcoholic. Then you become an alcoholic and an addict. And then you'll just finally become an alcoholic." I skipped a bunch of the steps and just became an alcoholic. It was just easier that way. And, you know, and I got really involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I know it sounds corny and you hear it from so many people, but it did save my life. And it gave me a life. It gave me a life. It gave me a God. When I was like 5 years sober, I was sitting in an AA meeting, raging. My theme when I was 5 years sober was just make it to six. Just make it to six. Don't kill anybody. Just make it to six. People, my good friends, my best friends could not sit next to me because it just oozed out of me. And I don't know where it was coming, but it just like emanated out of me. You know, I've done the steps. I did the steps for 6 months. When I was 6 months sober and we did my fourth and my fifth and I had my sixth step, I had no character defects. I was incapable of seeing character defects in my life. I might be a little slothful and a doormat. That's all I could see. And that's okay. Keep on coming back. At a year sober, I found out what selfishness and self-centeredness and, you know, I learned all those things, and I got them all. Thank you. Now I can finally come down and be with you guys. You know, and I did, I remember sitting in my ninth step. I worked at a gas station on Miramar Road, and it used to be just a tray of money and credit cards from these companies coming in. And my last night there, I stole like $70. That's the only thing I can remember. I know I stole a lot more than that. A lot more, but I don't know from who or how much. And I had to go back and make that amends. And I sat down with the manager of the company at that time and handed him $70. And he said, "You know, thank you so much." And then we spent an hour talking about his daughter because he was worried about her and her drug addiction. And, you know, and I make amends on a regular basis to society because I was just a leech. And it's the only way I know how to pay back all that stuff. And I pay my taxes today and, you know, all that stuff. I pay the parking meter and little things. I'm 24. My brother's about 7 years sober. My brother called me up. He was coming down for, I went back to school. I went back to school at 5 years sober, finally. It was like the next indicated thing to finally go back to school. You know, I quit with an associate's degree when I was drinking and using, because I could say, look, I've got something on the wall, leave me alone. So I got a diploma, now I can go party. Leave me alone. And everybody, from the moment I got sober, said, you should go back to school. I'm like, I've had enough of school. I don't want to go back to school. But at 5 years, it was evident for me to go back to school and finally figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I got into this program at Mesa College, and I've had a couple of things in my life feel so right in my gut. It was so obvious that it was God. I came down, I filled out the application. It was like, okay, God, this is what I really want to do. But if this is not it, I trust with all my being that you will show me where. And it was like you had to like interview and test for this, and I got called, you're an alternate. I'm like, okay, God, you're really trying to mess with me. It's like, how bad do you really want this? And like the next 2 days later, I got called and said, you got in the program. I work in the healthcare field right now. I've been with the same company for 16 years. I love what I do. And the best thing is it takes me out of me. Every day I'm at work because I have to help somebody else, you know, and it saved my life. I can't tell you how many times when my life is just crap, usually 9 times out of 10 of my own making, it allows me to go someplace else and think of somebody else for 8 hours. Then I can just jump right back into my own self-pity. But for once, you know, that's what I need, because I, you know, given the option, I'm always going to think about me. At 7 years sober, I think my brother was coming out for my graduation or something like that. I don't know. He called and he said, I'm ready. I'm done. He'd been out here for my family week when I was in treatment. And had gotten so loaded on the night before he was supposed to leave that he missed his plane. You know, heading out after sitting and doing hands to hands and all that stuff, knees to knees or whatever it was. And, you know, he called, he says, I'm ready. So I have a good friend, that same friend who told me about the process between an addict and an alcoholic. I called him up and I said, he's ready. Sent him down. You know, got him involved with AA. He's a lawyer now. My brother graduated from law school, which I think is really freaking funny. 3 years ago, and he is a lawyer now. This guy was in and out of jail and just the biggest F-up you could ever think of, and he's a lawyer now. And a father of three, and he's an unbelievable man, and he's 17 years sober. And he helps other lawyers that are working through this, you know? Unbelievable what this program is. And, you know, I talked to my brother. I'm like, actually talk to my brother, you know? We were the ones that I ran and he beat me up. That was our relationship. Or in between, it was like, he bought the coke and I really just used it all, you know? He was the one who taught me how to do bong hits. And he's a lawyer. Unbelievable. You know, so at 15 years sober, you know, I had been alone for a very long time. Never really had a long-term relationship. 2 months was like the longest term I've ever had a relationship. And, I really wanted to have that partner in my life. And I'd come to a place in my life where it was like, okay, I've got a job. I own my own home. I got my dogs. I got my friends. And I felt solid in my life for the first time. Like both feet planted on this earth, present in my life. I am okay. Right here, right now, truly. It hadn't happened ever. And God said, okay, you're ready. And brought this man into my life, who is now my husband. And we've been married for 8.5 years. Blows me away. You know, being in a relationship is the most challenging thing for my character defects and my self-centeredness, let alone being involved with somebody who is also in this program. Because they know what's going on. You know, it's not so like Normie. He's like, yeah, honey, okay. They know what's going on. And he calls me on my crap. And, you know, I've had to actually work on me. When you're living alone, you really don't have to work on yourself. You can get away with a lot of stuff. But when somebody else is in your life, you got to look at yourself, and it's been awesome. It's been awesome. God knows what he's doing. My picker is really broken, really broken. Once I got out of the way and let God take care of the situation, he did good. He done good. So here I am married. You know, I got the nice outside stuff. You know, I got a house, and I got a bunch of animals, and I got a good job, and I'm feeling really good, and, you know, the outside stuff looks fab. What I want to tell you about is the inside stuff, because that's the most important thing, because you got, you know, the outside stuff is temporary. It can go in a heartbeat. Our economy has shown that right now. And so I can't rely on that. What I have today is a God of my understanding that loves me no matter what. I have a faith and a knowledge that has gotten from here to here. No, I have no doubt that everything is going to be okay today. Nothing was ever going to be okay. Ever, ever, ever. It was going to be like this forever and ever and ever and ever, and I had to fix it. I know how to fix that really quick. Today, I know this too shall pass. I love that. This too shall pass, and it's all going to be okay. Not too sure about the process to getting okay, and as my good friend Lauren always says, my idea of okay probably has to change. But it is going to be okay. You know? We agnostics, lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves. I was probably 15 years sober and reading the book one more time, and I went, wow, that's cool. I remember that there before. Obviously. But where and how are we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. Right then and there. That's all it's all about. The 12 steps, the last one. I've had that spiritual awakening as a result of working these 12 steps. You know, I know today that the problem is me, as much as I want to really make it you. And that's the only place I have control over is me, changing me to change everything else. And, you know, there's been a lot of that. The last 2 years have been really hard. It started with January 2009, with my grandfather dying. And it just spiraled downhill from there. I think I lost 8 in 2009, friends and loved ones, people that I had known all my sobriety, you know, people that are way too young to die, but life is life and it sucks sometimes. Last year started off with, right about this time of the year, finding out my stepmom of 27 years. I had gotten diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. She made it to April 6th last year. So this year's been a, you know, it's been a lot of firsts. And it's been hard. You know, when my grandfather died, the first words out of my mouth to my father was, what can I do for you? By the time my stepmom died, I was done. You know, there's just so much I can give. Our good friend, Cindy and Craig, we walked Craig through his disease and his passing. And, you know, it's just been, cancer sucks. Cancer sucks. And, you know, we thought 2010 was going to make it. And let's see, I've got 4 down so far this year. Last year. 4 last year. 2011, yes. We're going to make it this year. Maybe I'll stay healthy. It's really hard because I work in healthcare. I work in a hospital. I watch death all the time. And people that are really messed up. And, you know, it's just exhausting coming home. And the morning of my stepmom's memorial, I'm at my Sunday morning meeting. My home group is Early Risers PB Alano Club, 9 a.m. Sunday morning. And I'm sitting in that meeting, knowing what's going to happen that afternoon. And I left that meeting driving to Costco to get the stuff for the memorial. And I had this overwhelming urge. I wanted to drink more than anything ever in my life. I just wanted a drink so bad my gut hurt. And first I was on the phone to my husband, and I took it out of my head and let it come out of my mouth that I wanted a drink. I really, really wanted a drink. And that's you guys working through me, you know, because given my own, I would have turned right, you know, wherever, got them in PB, hello, can you find stone's throw to a liquor store? And that is God, and that is you guys working through my life, you know? And I made it to that memorial, and there was a lot of booze at that memorial. A lot of people getting messed up. I was able to stand there sober and honor my stepmom. And continue this, because she was one of us. And I don't know what happened, but, we related on that level, even though she never really got into this program. I just know today that it's all going to be okay. There's going to be pain along the way. That's life. I didn't come in these rooms to live sheltered in these rooms because it's safe in here. I'm not worried about taking a drink in here. I'm not worried about, being touched in here. It's out there that it's hard. And life goes on. I'm not immune from life. Damn it. And what I've learned here is how to stay sober out there through life. I know that there's nothing in my life that can go on that one of you guys somewhere out there has not gone through the same thing. Death, divorce, good stuff, marriages, births, good stuff, just as scary as bad stuff. There's nothing, absolutely nothing that can happen in my life today that a drink's going to make better. Nothing. It's all going to be okay. This too shall pass. Emotions are not going to kill you. Some days I just sit on my hands, pull the covers over my head, and go back to sleep. Just don't want to take a drink or a drug today. It is an honor to speak at Alcoholics Anonymous. It's an honor to be asked to participate anywhere of service at Alcoholics Anonymous. I am truly grateful, and thank you for listening.